You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are so glad to have our guest join us on the program today, Anna Olmsted Lindgren, who is a serial entrepreneur who is definitely leaving her mark in Sweden. So this will be a great conversation. Anna is doing incredible things. And first of all, welcome to the program, Anna, and how are you doing today?
Thanks so much. It's really good to be on the show, and I'm doing really well. Thanks.
Excellent. Now, first of all, I just want to start off the conversation by getting to know a little bit more about you and your background. And you are a serial entrepreneur, so you have started many different startups. And I'd like to know if you believe that you have always displayed characteristics of an entrepreneur, if you knew that you were going to be an entrepreneur, you know, from a very young age.
I don't think I knew that I was going to be an entrepreneur. I just think that I did some entrepreneurial things when I was a kid. I like to sell things, and I think entrepreneurship is a lot about sales wanting to, I don't know, introduce new things or to new people or to people in general, I guess. So I did a lot of things when I was a kid. I'd walk around, I'd make like brownies, and I'd sell them to my neighbors, or I'd be active like that. So I think that's maybe how I got started with right. Knowing that I wasn't intimidated by selling.
Right. Now tell us how you developed your interest in entrepreneurship, you know, even just selling brownies when you were a kid, and transforming that into something that you know, something more tangible in the fact that you started to create your own startup. So what was that like?
Well, I think I spent many years in Japan, and when I was growing up, and I think I realized when I lived there, or at least after I'd moved back, when I moved back to Sweden, that things were a lot different to Sweden and Japan, and I was always questioned about how are they doing things differently and why. You could never sort of know exactly why they were doing things in the way they were. And I think that sort of stimulated the creativity. And so when I got back to Sweden, when I went to school and university, I think I was always interested in finding new ways of doing things that were done differently. And with the whole internet era and dot-com period in late 90s, I saw the chance to sort of like make something out of that. Mm-hmm. And I started my first company together with a couple of friends, school friends. So I don't know where it comes from, but I think I like to do something in different ways and to start new things.
Wonderful. Now, you've called entrepreneurship as a sort of lifestyle career. So I'd like to know what you mean by this. And in that regard, do you think that entrepreneurs truly understand that what they're getting themselves into is a lifestyle career? It's not just a normal career.
That's a really good question. No, I don't think people know what they're getting themselves into in general when they start out as entrepreneurs. I think especially today when entrepreneurship and startups are such a hot topic, and there's so many successful entrepreneurs, and the only people you read about are successful entrepreneurs. And I think it's really important to know that entrepreneurship is a really tough career, and especially when you start out with something that no one knows anything about. There's a completely new brand. It might be a completely new product that you're going to launch onto a market that might not even exist yet. So there's so many unknowns, and that's really tough, and it takes a long time. So when I started to use the lifestyle career, saying or whatever, it came from the fact that I wanted to build. I put myself. I drew a little picture of myself in the middle, and I realized, okay, what do I want in my life, and how much money do I need to make this sort of cover the costs that this will require. And then I realized that I wanted to spend time with my family. I wanted to spend time with my friends. I wanted to travel. I wanted to have fun. I wanted to do all these things. And that's when I realized that entrepreneurship was quite good in that sense, because if I could cover the costs that were needed to do all the things I wanted, then I could sort of make my own career out of that. And if, as long as I sold as much as all of this required, then I could live that way. And I thought that was quite neat and a good way to live as a woman. And you were in control of your situation. I was able to have children and take care of my children, but at the same time start my companies and run them parallel to family life, which I thought was good.
Wonderful. Now, if you're just now tuning into our show, you're listening to Women Investing and Women and Girls. We're talking with our guest today, Anna Lindgren, about her role within Tasteline. And Tasteline, is a great way to learn more about how to find recipes online. And it is such an innovative concept. So, Anna, if you can explain to us, first of all, how did Tasteline start?
Well, I was studying at the Stockholm School of Economics, and then two of my school friends had a company called Delicious Cards. Basically, what they did was print a really a good recipe on one side of the card, and on the other, there was a wonderful picture of this dish or the recipe. And they posted them in different stores, and people picked them up as inspiration for what they were going to cook for dinner that night or for lunch or whatever. And in 1999, they wanted to take this online, and they asked me if I wouldn't want to join them for this. And I was really keen to work with them because we'd done a couple of projects together within school, and that's how it began. And there really wasn't anything, except we did have quite a lot of content. We had quite a lot of recipes. And basically what we did was put them into a database. And as search was growing parallel to this online, with Google, obviously, and AltaVista and all the Yahoo search engines that were being developed at the time, it was a really good period for us to launch at the same time. We basically used the same advertising model. We sold, instead of AdWords, we sold food words, so you could actually buy the word olive oil or whatever ingredient you wanted to match your brand with. But obviously this was in 1999, so it was way too early, and no one had really, well, first of all, there was the problem of people not being as connected as they are today, obviously, and didn't have access to broadband. And then there was the difficulty of the fact that the food and beverage industry that were our clients, they did nothing online. And when we sold food words, they basically just looked at us as if we were crazy. Mm-hmm. And they were more used to doing things in store, or outdoor advertising was part of their deal. So quite a number of years until this really took off. I think we were way too early, but we did manage to secure a spot, and we grew the brand quickly, and many people started to use it. So we did survive, which was more than many other companies at the time. So it was a really, really good period.
Of course. And like you said, this all kind of happened before that .com bubble burst, and, you know, all these websites were coming out. So with that being said, what do you find most intriguing about, you know, a tech or digital startup, because of the fact that you were kind of in that market before it became big, and now you are continuing to have tech startups even now, and obviously there's a lot more emphasis on technology and being connected.
Yeah. No, but the thing was, I mean, when we started this, I think a number of us were so naive. Obviously, we were onto something, but it was way too early. There were so many companies that were started in 99, obviously, that are profitable today, but that actually went bankrupt in early 2000 because they were too early. So a lot of things that were being done back then are proven success stories today. And that's what I like about entrepreneurship too, that even if you're too early, it's something that you're building for someone else, or it's something that's important, this sort of driving force of building new things. I think it's amazing. I love that part of it. Obviously, it's more fun to be the one that actually survives. But even if you're not, you know that you're taking part of something that's developing something, which I think is lots of fun.
Excellent. Now, when we come back from our first break, we're going to talk more about Anna and her role within Tasteline and some of the other startups that Anna has created. But first, I'd like to invite all of you by connecting with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting, or on Twitter, comment and use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, or hashtag we for she. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
And welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. We are going to get right back to our conversation with our guest today on the show, Anna Olmsted Lindgren, who is a serial entrepreneur from Sweden. Now, before we went to our first break, we talked a little bit about Anna's background in entrepreneurship, as well as her first startup, Tasteline. And I'd like to continue talking about Tasteline, Anna, if you would. Just describe your role within Tasteline and what this position entailed.
Well, as I was saying earlier, I was contacted by two of my school friends and we started the company together. And then they quite quickly, they were two guys and they wanted me to be the CEO. So quite early on, I was actually only 25 years old when I got this position. And I like the fact that I was extremely naive at the time and didn't really realize what that came with. And I'm extremely grateful for it today that they gave me that chance and the opportunity to really try something, as big as being a CEO at the time, and also the opportunity to try on board work, everything that came with being a CEO, employing people, and, everything that came with that. So, that's how it started, and my position was obviously as a founder and the CEO.
Excellent. Now, as far as the idea of Tasteline, again, you started this in 1999, so before, you know, a lot of people were connected through internet. And then I'm wondering, how was this idea scaled over time?
So it began as, we were three people who started the company, and we had visions back then of launching this in all different countries globally. And that's why we chose the name Tasteline. We wanted it to be international at once. We ended up being in a Swedish company because of what happened with the dot-com period and all these companies going bankrupt. We really, really had some extremely difficult years. We went up to about 25 people who were employed within the company. And then all of a sudden, all of that went down, and we scaled down the company to about 7 people and really, really focused on surviving and really getting traction to the Swedish market. Ended up doing that, and today it has been sold, well, first of all, to a media company called Schibsted in Norway, rather, and the Nordic region, and then to a food delivery company called Mathem, which is Sweden-based, but also have international vision. So I can see the company taking off in the direction that we envisaged, for the company in 1999 now. So again, internet, we were too early, and all the plans that we were making back then are being realized now, which I think is amazing. In different constellation with new owners, new people involved, and several, 100 people employed today. So it's such a big company today. It's part of a much bigger company. So I'm so glad that it survived, and it's scaling much bigger today than it was back then, obviously, but it just takes time.
Right. That's very interesting. Now I'd like to talk about another startup that you created called MedUniverse. And yes. MedUniverse's concept is so different from Tasteline's. So I was wondering what made you want to take this jump?
Well, basically, I was extremely fascinated by the fact that people were sharing recipes online. Recipes have always been shared, and if it was done earlier, it might have been something that you ripped out of a magazine or something like that. Now it was all done online. People could add their own ingredients. The sharing aspect was so fascinating. And I started to question what else is being shared online. And I'm married to a doctor. And then I started to see, what are they doing? What are doctors doing online? Could we get a sharing of patient cases going so that a Japanese doctor would connect with a Swedish doctor so that they could actually exchange ideas on a specific patient case? And so in 2009, we started MedUniverse, which with the aim of it being a network for doctors, basically, sort of like a LinkedIn or a Facebook functionality group where they could actually exchange ideas. Now, what I didn't foresee was that, first of all, the target group doctors was much different to people in general who liked recipes. Recipes was a lot easier to share than patient cases. Right. doctors had quite a hierarchical structure, obviously having lots of years of education and always trusting people who are older for more information and more experience around patients. So there was a lot of things that didn't really make them connect or make them network between each other, which was very frustrating. And so 3 years ago, we did a pivot in the company and decided to build a software instead, where we could actually fill it with content and authentic patient cases, but not real actual patient cases that doctors could practice on, and as an educational base, do digital patient cases. And once you send a patient case to, say, 200 oncologists in Sweden, you get their interaction, you can aggregate that data and see, okay, how are they treating this 38-year-old woman who comes in with these symptoms? What diagnosis are they making and what treatment are they giving? And with the statistics that come with that, you can really follow through and see what's happening with this patient as he or she is being treated. And the client in our case now are the life science companies or the pharma companies that really want to know when are their drugs being used and how are they being used. So they're interested in buying the reports after the interaction of the doctors. So that's what we're doing today.
Absolutely. And that's such an incredible startup and so innovative. And I'd like to remind anyone who's just now tuning into our show that you're listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We're talking with our guest today, Anna Lindgren, about MedUniverse. Now, Anna, as far as, you know, who is involved with MedUniverse, are these doctors just from Sweden or are you attracting different doctors from all over the world?
We are now, the difference of building a network, a local network, was obviously once we had a software, we could have it in any country. So we are working on several different markets today where companies, global companies, compare different markets. They will send the same patient case to Germany, France, Sweden, and Holland, for instance, and get comparative data over these four different countries. Same patient case, sent to different doctors on different markets. It doesn't always have to be doctors either. It could also be to nurses, but we've kept it to the healthcare professionals.
Mm-hmm. And this sounds like a pretty complex kind of technology that you're using through this startup. So how long did it take for you to develop this concept and technology to fit what you wanted your goals to be?
Yeah, so we just launched our beta version about 6 months ago, and we're now moving into the next phase. So it took 3 years to get this company to where it is today, and we're now picking up quite a lot of traction on this. So this is really, I mean, when we've launched the latest version, and we're confident that this actually works. Over the last 2 years, we've been testing it with different clients on a global level and had some really, really interesting results. And now we're trying to get it into different countries and especially in Europe at the moment, but hopefully in the States as we go along as well.
Now, is MedUniverse the only type of doctor networking type of site of its kind that uses different types of patient case studies?
No, I'd say there are lots of different options when it comes to patient cases. Patient cases are quite a common ground for education when it comes to for doctor education. But the software that we're using is a bit innovative because it compares where it combines rather both statistics as in market research, basically functionality, and also the ability to interact with it. So it's a combination of business intelligence and market research that, thanks to the technology that we're using, and a lot of that has come from ideas that we had within Tasteline, and then we've applied it to this industry instead.
Perfect. Now, this is such a great, you know, networking platform, and it's so exciting that you're working towards the spreading of this technology to make it available for doctors in other parts of the world. It's so interesting. When we come back from this next break, we're going to talk more about some of the other startups that Anna has been involved in. But for now, we'd like to invite all of you to connect with us and let us know what you think about this discussion by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, you can leave your comments and use the hashtag WomenInvest, hashtag GirlsInvest, or hashtag We4C. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls, with your host, Michelle Jaffe.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are talking with our guest today on the show, Anna Omstad Lindgren, who once again is a serial entrepreneur from Sweden. Now, before we came back from our first break, we talked more about MedUniverse. And now I'd like to shift the conversation now, Anna, to talking more about the Forum for Welfare. And this is something that you are also involved in. So first of all, I'd like to know if you can tell us more about what this forum is.
Well, basically, it's a forum that started 2 years ago. It's an initiative to really focus on what welfare areas can be improved and how can it be done. And it's all done on an idea and a pro bono initiative. And we've engaged people within quite high positions in Sweden where they have seen within the welfare, what can we do differently? And specifically within I'd say hospital management, what can be effectivized, what can we do, what and where can we change our strategies to prepare to use the system in a more efficient way.
Excellent. So as far as the welfare sector challenges that Sweden faces, how does this forum work to find solutions? And in what ways does this forum work to create solutions that haven't been thought before?
Well, basically, we look at different areas where we know that the system is being heavily used. For instance, where there are language barriers with people who come into to Sweden and had difficulties. They've had a number of different diseases. They're multi-patients. They come to the hospital several times and really trying to identify how can they be helped in a more efficient way so they're not just bounced around the system. And that's been really interesting to see. Okay, how can we get people to early on, for instance, identify that part of their difficulty is diabetes, for instance, but they may also have several different difficulties in this and several other diseases. And instead of being pushed into different therapeutical areas and different doctors, we tried to get teams organized around these patients. And that's been a really interesting project. And obviously, it's when you do something like this, it's quite difficult to get a change in the system. But if you go in with a lot of pro bono activity and people who are really focused on producing some results to see if this works, you get the engagement also from the hospital level. You get them to see, okay, we can actually do this differently. So what I really enjoy with Forum for Welfare is the fact that there's a lot of entrepreneurship because it's been allowed, and it's also a way of bringing entrepreneurship into a traditional setting where maybe there's not a lot of room for that because there's such heavy restrictions on how much money can be used. And when you come in with an initiative like this, you get to try something different. It's not necessarily more expensive, but you get the possibility to try something new. So it's been so much fun to work with this project. Another project that we've done is obviously to see how can we move digitally within this space. What concepts are being developed within the digital scene? I mean, there's so much of measuring your own a pulse, measuring your body, eating pills to measure whatever you're doing. There's so many initiatives like that. They're not so heavily integrated into the hospital systems because there's just not a good way of connecting the two. So what we've tried to get going is some competitions where people can develop apps that then can actually be tested within the actual system. And that's also been a really good way of doing something extremely to the point where they can try something and see if there are results, and then after they've been able to test it, see if they can implement it. So we've had a number of pilots over the last 2 years and some really amazing results. So we are now looking forward to taking this further into 2015 and 2016.
That's incredibly terrific, and how inspiring that you get such a group together to help find solutions to these issues that are affecting your country. And I'd like to remind you that you are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. We're talking with our guest today, Anna Lindgren, about Forum for Welfare. Now, Anna, what you've described is that there is a group, and they're not all doctors, correct? You have some different types of people working together to find these solutions. So how effective is it that you don't have all of one kind of person, you know, from one kind of background, from one career area working towards these problems?
Well, I think that's the whole point. I think in any creative setting, you need diversity. I mean, that's common knowledge nowadays. And I think that's been really helpful. I think my input has been from the digital aspect, which not a lot of people have had in this group. Other have had extremely high positions and had the power to get things really fed into the system in a different, in a much more efficient way. And some have governmental positions that they know the government system, or political system rather. So, I mean, different backgrounds always ensures that you get a lot more different opinions. So that's been a lot of fun.
Excellent. Now, Anna, I want to talk about another startup that you created. And this one, I believe, is most similar to another startup that you that we talked about in our discussion, MedUniverse, and the fact that you are creating a sort of network. But this time it's for entrepreneurs. And again, I'd like to know more about Pokerface. So first of all, can you explain to us what Pokerface is?
Pokerface is a network for women entrepreneurs and business leaders. It's Sweden-based today, but we are having some traction abroad as well. So we're seeing what we can develop within different countries. And basically what we do is we play poker, which we found was an extremely good activity to really work on your poker face and your negotiating skills, but also getting women to do something that sort of ensures that they are teamed up around one activity, and that they can, I mean, when I say that we are 100 entrepreneur women in Sweden who play poker, I mean, nobody ever believes that, because usually I get the point that, well, no, then they can't be 100 women who know how to play poker, or there can certainly not be 100 entrepreneur women who play poker. So that's been a lot of fun. And I was 5 years ago, I started this basically at the same time as MedUniverse. I wanted to connect around an activity. And we were actually a number of entrepreneurs who met on a regular basis. There were 10 of us who exchanged ideas. Actually, the founder of Spotify and some of the companies that you would know were in this group. And we met on a regular basis, say 3 or 4 times per year. We had dinner together and we exchanged ideas about our startups. And in this format, a couple of years down the line, after the dot-com crisis and all that, some of the companies, or some of the, there were 8 men and 2 women in this group, they wanted to start to play poker. And I sort of pulled out of it because I couldn't play poker. And they kept insisting, you should come anyway. And I'm like, I can't play poker, I'm sorry. Like, you should really be here because we need some girls, you know. And then I realized, the fact that I wasn't going to these meetings anymore, I was missing out on a lot of the network activity, obviously, between some of the foremost startups in Sweden. I was missing out on some really important things. It wasn't just the poker, it was the whole thing of actually connecting around the business part of the digital development. So I missed that. And then I decided to, I called some other women and said, well, they didn't want to join me either because they couldn't play poker. And then I decided to start a school. So I called 50 women who I know had started companies in Sweden and asked them if they didn't want to play poker with me. And they said, you know, I can't play poker. Well, we're going to start a school. And then all these women were like, oh, that's perfect. You know, when it's something that they can learn and bring out their pencils and papers and write about it, they were all like enthusiastic about it. And so we started this. And we were really, really keen not to make it just a network for women. We wanted to make sure that there were men in this as well, and that we could challenge different groups. So the network has basically always been open for us to interact with other networks or entrepreneurs or whoever we want to challenge. And so early on, we contacted one of the private banks in Sweden, and we wanted to play in their we wanted to make sure that we could challenge their customers. So we actually, for the first 3 years, we played in a bank. And then for a couple of years, we played in a lawyer's firm. And now we're back at a different bank, Swedbank in Sweden. And we challenge their customers. We challenge the people who are working with the company, within the company, and other networks that we meet. So it's been a lot of fun.
Love it. It sounds, like you said, so much fun. And what an innovative way to combine both networking and a fun activity as well. We are going to go to another break, but first we'd like to connect with us by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, or hashtag weforshe. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the State of Women Radio Network, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on women and girls.
And welcome back to Women Investing and Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to get back to our conversation with our guest today on the show, Anna Olmsted Lindgren, who is a serial entrepreneur from Sweden. So we are so glad to have her part of our program today. And Anna, as far as your different startups go, you have had many different experiences in the entrepreneur world, and especially through tech startups and things of that matter. So I'd like to know from you, what is a challenge that you faced while creating the startups that you did, and how did you recover from those challenges?
I think one challenge that I always seem to forget, and probably a good thing that I do forget, because I would probably never start a company again if I didn't, but the thing that things take so much more time than you'd think in the beginning. I mean, even when I first started Tasteline, I really learned how long it took to establish a new brand and bring something into a new market, and especially a market that people weren't actually in yet, because the internet phenomena wasn't nearly as big as it is today.
Right.
But so timing and how long it actually takes to start a company. And when I started my second venture, I it would have been good if I used the Tasteline brand in some way, maybe called it Waistline and did a diet version of Tasteline. But I went into a completely different industry, a completely different target group, which then obviously took just as long to start. And that was a bit of a struggle. And I think the older I get, the more I realize, okay, well, there are no shortcuts into bringing new companies into the world. You might get super lucky. You might have lots of money pushed into your company, and that might make it easier or might make it a little bit quicker. But generally, starting a company takes a long time. And if you have thought that, okay, well, it's going to take 6 months and then I'll reach break even, then I'm fine, you might have to reconsider and think again and make more realistic plans. I'd say usually it takes about 3 years to get the business going and 5 years till you're profitable, at least based on my experience, which is quite a number of years.
So with that being said, what is some advice that, you know, if you knew what you knew now, that you could have told yourself, you know, when you first started thinking about not only just starting a tech startup, but, you know, any startup, what would you advise yourself? What would you maybe do differently?
Well, what we talked about earlier today about the lifestyle career, if you're happy with the fact that you might not be making the best salary, but you know that the salary that you are making or the money that you're able to get out of your company every month, or maybe not even every month, every other month, covers your costs. Make sure that you know, okay, this is what it's going to cost. I don't think a lot of people do that calculation before they start a company, especially not people who've had a career where they have had a solid income and that they know, okay, every month I'm going to get this amount. If you're not aware of what it actually costs and how long it might take until you actually have a profitable business, you might end up being extremely, shocked by that. And I think that's what you need to be prepared for. And that said, like I said earlier, it's good to be naive when you start businesses, because if you don't do that many calculations, you often dare to do something. So it's a mix of both those, I guess, a portion of naivety and also of of actually making the calculation so that you know that you're not going to suffer too much when that salary doesn't come 1 month.
Exactly. Now, as far as advice for specifically women who are interested in starting their own business, but specifically for tech companies, do you have any advice that you'd like to share with, you know, our young women listeners who are interested in doing that?
I'd say that more women need to get into the tech scene. And there's such opportunities because lots of companies need, like we were talking about diversity before. I mean, there are too few women working within the tech industry. And I think that's such an opportunity in itself. You can really stick out. You can build a good career. And people are looking for input into, I'd say, women targeted businesses. So when the target group are women, I think it's very well, it's essential that more women work within the industry. So, that's one thing I generally recommend more women to get into the business. And they might not want to be the entrepreneurs who actually found the companies and make sure that it makes start the company. Then join someone else who wants to start a company. Join a team of I mean, there's so many bromance companies with all these guys getting together and starting their companies. Well, join a team like that and make sure to add to their add diversity to their thoughts and about the business. That'll definitely make it more creative.
Wonderful. Now, Anna, it seems like you're always beginning a new startup, always starting another project. So what do you have coming up in your career? Do you have any new projects that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I am extremely excited about this MedUniverse venture and the fact that we did a pivot 3 years ago. It almost feels like a new company for me. So right now I'm extremely focused on that, but I'm also looking forward to going to New York in September with Women Investing in Women and Poker Face. So that's going to be an extremely good activity. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of women and men meet over a game of poker and exchange new ideas. And I hope something will come out of that.
Absolutely. And we are definitely looking forward to that as well. And hopefully those of you who are interested in attending can brush up on your poker skills as well. Mm-hmm. So that would be very exciting. Lastly, how can we connect with you? How can we learn more about what you're doing through your startups?
Well, I'm on Twitter, so I'd be happy to connect with you there on Anna Olingren. And, it'd be great to stay in touch that way.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being a part of our show today. It was great to have you on our program and to have your voice heard.
Thank you.
And first, I'd like to invite all of you to connect with us and let us know about the conversation that we had with Anna by going to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter. Be sure to use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, or hashtag weforshe. We'd like to also thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Women Investing and Women and Girls. This show is produced by the State of Women Radio Network, the first radio network for women and girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls with Michelle Jaffe. Download our shows on iTunes or listen on demand right here on thestateofwomen.com, the first and only global radio network focused exclusively on delivering the latest trends in investing, entrepreneurship, and global women's issues by and for women and girls.